This podcast is in partnership with Design Biennale Rotterdam, Phoenix Museum, Lack of Guidance, Margreet Olsthoorn, New Institute and Rotterdam Partners, as they all share the common goal to create awareness, share opinions and empower creative growth.
In the last 3 years, I can count on one hand how many extra days we've done outside of the regular office hours, because I really believe there's enough time to do great things in that time. I think just find your niche and see how useful you can be in that little bubble that you create around yourself. I really believe the world doesn't need big corporate machines. We need like small, more boutique scale studios that are really focusing on quality. We just need to completely rethink our relationship with space, architecture and commission.
Today I'm joined by Paul Cournet, architect, researcher and founder of Cloud, next to being the deputy editor of Capsule. After over a decade at OMA working on major international projects, Paul made a radical shift. In this episode, we dive into how he builds a practice guided by values, not scale. We talk about authorship, collective thinking, working smarter, and what it means to design with people, not just for them. Let's listen to his story.
Good day, Paul. Welcome in the podcast.
Thank you, Bastian.
How are you doing?
Very good.
Can you explain where we are today?
Hey. Welcome to Rotterdam, the city of architecture and architects. Welcome to the studio. We're here in the center of Rotterdam, a long history of architecture, and we are at Cloud Studio today.
Can you explain a little bit what your roadmap is?
Yeah, I grew up in the south of France in a very sort of simple and modest environment, close to Spain, next to the Basque Country. And as a kid, I grew up into skateboard and graffiti and hip hop. And when I grew up in the 90s, we had the first computer at home in 96. I remember well, it was yesterday. Internet quickly arrives. And I just, like all the kids of my generation, we grew up with internet and seeing what was online and music and videos and films. And I just felt like where I grew up was not necessarily the place where my community might be. I had this dream as a kid going to Paris, because this is where graffiti was happening, people painting trains and subways. I had to decide a little bit what I wanted to do later in my life. I was drawn into architecture somehow. I went to visit art school, was not really my thing. And I think just spending time at night in cities and rooftops and train stations and abandoned like warehouses, I just love this feeling of learning from cities more than painting trains. So I moved to Bordeaux to do a bachelor. That was like a combination of architecture and urban design, which was interesting. But then my aim was to go to Paris. Then I moved there for my master's. But quickly in Paris, it was like 2009. The scene in architecture in France was not super exciting either. You would either go work for Jean Nouvel. At that time, they were not hiring anyone. And at that time, the Netherlands were big, huge culture in architecture, design was like huge. And so for me, going to library, being on the internet, I felt like the Netherlands were like the most exciting place for me to grow up as an architect. And of course, Rem Koolhaas was the kind of icon of it. I had read Delirious Neurox, I don't know how many times, SML Excel just had been published, content had been published. They were doing crazy installation with inflatables, t-shirts, exhibition. They were doing shows for Prada. Working on museums, cities was like, for me, the kind of most exciting practice at that time. After my first years of master's in Paris, I moved to London to learn English. As a French kid, my English was pretty terrible, let's say. I moved to London for a few months, worked on my portfolio. I literally took my backpack. The next day, I finished my first year of master, moved to London. I was working in bars, working on my portfolio every night and stuff like that. And my dream was to find a job like OMA, like Rem Koolhaas. I was trying to be lucid as well. As a kid, you're never going to get there if you're not from Harvard or Columbia. But somehow I got an interview. They offered me an internship. So I moved to Rotterdam in September 2010. When I arrived there, it's the typical like internship experience, working really hard, like endless amount of hours, not sleeping. Some nights, not probably today anymore, but it just was part of the learning experience, let's say. And yeah, after that internship, I was like, hey, do I go back to school? Because I was not graduated at that time. Should I change school? Should I move to London to finish my studies? And then long story short, after a year of internship and not sleeping and working insane amount of hours, I was super lucky that they gave me a job. So eventually a year after, I became a junior architect there at OMA. And then, yeah, that became my job for 12 years. Fast forward 3 years ago, I worked there, all amazing, all the kind of great things you would wish to work when you're like a young architect. I did so many things. And I love the idea that this studio was both able to bridge architecture, like building buildings, but also the more research part, the AMO parts, where they were doing anything but building buildings. And me being able to work on these both edges was just super exciting, entertaining, and a huge learning curve that I wish anyone. Also, in France, education is like free, which is great. So you don't have any debt when you come out of school. But that also means there's no budget. So I had never seen like a foam cutter or a 3D printer or anything beyond cutting cardboard on your kitchen table. So coming here and then see how much experimentation and how much horizontal the structure was, I just fell in it. And 3 years ago, I thought it was time after COVID to move on. And since 3 years, I started my own studio, Cloud, here in Rotterdam, the city of architecture. And then, yeah, since then, it's been like a whole new experience and journey where we're just starting a new chapter now.
Thank you for the answer. I feel a lot of joy and energy in the room.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. It's always love to talk about it.
Probably you did a lot of self-reflection over the past years. And when I listened to your answer, it feels like everything went quite smooth.
Yeah, that's maybe how, yeah, okay. Good to hear.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the things that you needed to overcome, the challenges that you faced during those years? Yeah. Coming up to the point where you're now?
I think at the end, like being an architect, you need to have a mindset. You need a kind of attitude towards what you're trying to do as a creative. Either you are an architect or an artist or painter or musician or lawyer, actually, you can be creative in your own way. Being a kid, grew up with very simple means and in the middle of nowhere, like any other kid. If you want to achieve your dream and pursue something that is as close as possible to your dream, I think you just have to work really hard and just believe in the process of one day. Hopefully you will get to a point where you look back and you feel you made the right decisions. It was not so linear, and it's definitely not linear, but at the end, yeah, I've just always been trying to look at myself and be, hey, am I in a position where I'm actually enjoying what I'm doing? Am I surrounded by people that value my work? And do I feel like I relate to people that I work with? And I think if you manage to put yourself in an environment where you surround yourself with people that are running faster than you and better than you, and you try to catch up all the time, take that and understand that you can also influence the people under you, the younger ones, and give them a platform, and then trying to bring them with you in this journey, then I think you're good. Yes, it will take years and it will take a lifetime to achieve a piece of what you were hoping for. But if you trust it's possible, the journey is very exciting.
What you hoped for a couple of years ago, did it change the goal that you pursued or the dream?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what you realize as well, because you pursue something, but you never reach it, or your goal keeps changing. When I was a kid, I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to paint. I wanted to be like a graffiti artist. Later, I was really into music, and I thought, hey, music might be something for me. But then you fall into architecture, and then you get super excited to discover new thing and work in things related to architecture. And then you work for a big office and you're like, hey, I really want to be on top there. And I want to be one of the people that has the team and leads different projects. But as soon as you get there, your goal changes. And now I'm in a situation where I love building a new studio and starting from scratch and having a small team and being involved with projects and clients that relate. So I think overall, and that's what keeps you going. If you keep this dream, this sort of like passion for moving forward, I think that this is when things keep going.
For people who are listening and they think yeah, a dream, a goal, but when I actually reached it or didn't reach it maybe, and it passed by, it was ungrabbable, they might have felt failure or self-doubt because the goal changed, so they needed to pursue something else. What would you say or share as a tip to those people who are at that crossroad and can't grasp to actually then change the goal?
The trick is you will see a lot of people giving up very quickly. And it's really hard to stick to something. You try something for a year, it doesn't work, you give up. You try something else, you give up, doesn't work, you move on. And then you keep on jumping on short experiences that might seem disappointing or like a defeat or a failure, as you say it. But I think the key here is just to keep going. And regardless of recognition or regardless of how hard it is, if you look at heroes or legends, people that as inspirations, let's say, just think about how many years they've put on of work to reach to where they are. If you think about anyone that is recognized in their field, they've dedicated their life to doing one thing. And if you're able in your life to do one really good thing, then people will recognize you and admire and take you as an inspiration. But my take on that is that you just have to keep going and just stick to it. It might be very difficult financially. You might lose a lot of friends. You might spend less time with your family, your kids, whoever you're spending usually time with. But if you have this dream, whatever it is, and you stick to it, dedicate your life to it, at the end, people will come to you and say, hey, what you've done, I think, has inspired me for whatever reason. Keep doing what you're doing. Stay low profile, stay humble. Try to involve people that inspire you around you. Somehow, at some point, the wave will turn and this idea of failure or missing out or not succeeding in whatever way, I think will turn into a positive wave. I really believe this thing of domino effect or positive wave. Do one thing positive around you, it will lead to something positive. Even though the result is not immediate or it might take years to see something coming back to you. But if you create this wave of positive energy around you, I really believe that it will come back to you in a positive way. And same way, think about it differently or failure. If people around you have negative attitudes or have negative impact around them, one day it will come back to them in a negative way. And if you stick to that, if you keep working on this wave of positive energy around you, do that for a year. Do that for 10 years. That for a lifetime, it will come back to you either by inspiring others because you will make a lot of money out of it if that's your dream, either because your friends will be recognizing you as like a pioneer in your field, whatever it is. But I think that sort of positive wave is something that you have to cultivate. And I think that's how you will start also not thinking in terms of failure, but in terms of successes. And it's all about the energy. I can look back at myself and be like, hey, that one, I fucked it up, or that one, I missed it, or that one was, I didn't succeed, I failed. But if you start thinking differently about anything you do and you just skip this idea of failure and then think about more experiences and think about something that you experienced or you connected, or that was just one step of the process, then eventually we turn into a positive thing and a success. In many levels, you need to surround yourself with all these little successes every day, doing one thing at a time. It will pile up eventually, and it will lead you to somewhere maybe as close as to your dream or one of the dreams, but it will take you to a position when you look back, you're like, hey, the journey was actually pretty fun and exciting, and I'm glad I took the decision, and I didn't bend, and I kept going.
Several questions after this answer. How many friends did you lose on the way?
I don't know. It's just like when I look at where I grew up, and you always look at what you did and where you grew up and your friends and what they're doing now and what you're doing. I moved from this, let's say, comfortable youth or a position where I moved city, and then my friends from my hometown were like, hey, why are you moving city? And I moved country, and my friends from my own country were like, hey, why are you leaving us and moving to a new country? And then I dedicated over 10 years of my life working for a company. And instead of going out, I was in the office. And people were like, hey, why are you not coming out with me? You have to take decisions and then compromise probably some relationship with some people. But I made so many new friends through my work, through my journey, that at the end of the day, it's maybe like also natural selection, where you end up maybe not staying in touch so much with some people, but you also connect. If you manage to connect through incredible people through your work, I think then you surround yourself by the right people. If through your work you connect with people that have inspired you, like heroes that you consider as mentors or heroes or legends, through that work, get close to them and learn from them, I think will really change. You would also attract people that you've inspired and come with you in the journey, and then you end up collaborating in one way or another. You might need to lose some to win others. And I'm maybe not the most social guy. I love people that are passionate. So I'm not really loving hanging out in bars and clubs. I've done it, but I love connecting with people I admire, either as creatives or passionate about whatever they're doing. I feel those people fill me up with energy and keep me going. That's what I'm trying to do, connecting the dots, connecting through people and surrounding yourself by positive energy.
Did you have a lot of moments of FOMO in the beginning, before the moment that you actually realized, I just move forward. I'm not living up to the expectations of others, like going to friends, to parties and such. Can you actually explain, which is maybe hard,
a certain moment where you actually made the switch and you said, I'm not going to be torn apart, because so many people are having that FOMO feeling, work-life balance and such?
FOMO is good. You should have FOMO. I've recently learned this new term, JOMO, joy of missing out. And I love that, this idea of not going out and just being focused. And I think, yeah, especially today with social media and other things, it's easy to have that FOMO. Hey, why am I not at this festival? Why I was not invited to that fashion show? Or why am I not going to that conference in this other city? All my friends are there. But I love just being focused and just being in the kitchen and cooking and working. You have to be selective, right? Because you could spend your life going out, and it's just, no offense, it's great. I would love to just not worry about anything and just enjoying life. But I think you have to make decisions and decide where you want to spend your time. And when you spend your time somewhere, where that leads you somehow. And sometimes you have to decide whether you want to go out and hang out with your friends. It's you having a fun time. You might be hangover the next day, which is also fine. You have a good time, or instead just being working with people that are inspiring and spending time with them and creating something together. I don't know. It's a balance. I feel there's a little bit of FOMO, a little bit of JOMO. And then you just have to balance things in a way that, yeah, you just enjoy the process. Feel like you've made the right decisions through your week.
I was live tweeting you at the moment.
Good, man. Running your own business, having two kids now, trying to be present with my family, with my friends. It's a lot. It's on the table. So it can feel really intense. And you need some time. You feel, hey, I'm spending too much time in the office. I should spend more time with my kids. And then when you're spending more time with your kids, you're like, hey, I should actually be in the studio working. And when I'm either with my kids or at work, you're like, hey, I should actually spend time with my family. And it's a puzzle. But hey, I'm not going to complain. I'm loving it. Being independent is such a great feeling after being part of a bigger structure for such a long time and being involved in a bigger machine, being able to be independent and set your schedule is such a kind of luxury. And for me, that's the biggest luxury. Being independent is the biggest luxury. And people don't really realize that. You've had to be working for someone else to understand how exciting or grateful you should be to be independent. Yeah, so very happy. Like, it's a journey, right? We should do this interview in 10 years again and look back to see how both of us have evolved, to see how far we came. But yeah, great, super happy. So many things for 2025 coming up on a personal and professional level. So yeah, a lot of new things coming up. It's great.
You mentioned that you juggle a lot privately and work ambitions. How well do you know yourself, and how do you have the conversation in the moment when you feel like I should have chosen for work or for my children? How does this go inside your mind?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't go easy, that I know.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a tough one. I don't know. I'm also changing recently about it, or thinking differently about it. I'm starting to try to take care of myself more. The tricky part about working so much is that you get so much sucked into work, and then you have this tunnel vision that you don't see anything around it, which is great because you're super focused, but you leave a lot of things around you as well. Your personal health, your friends, your family, we talked about it, right? So yeah, this idea of finding a better balance and having kids also makes me understand that you don't need to necessarily work 12 hours a day to be productive and come out with something great. Try to do that in 6 hours, because I actually have 6 hours coming up taking care of my kids. But try to be as efficient in 6 hours than you were in 12 and produce something that will be great or even better than just being in the office all the time. So I'm trying to find this new balance of like, how can you be productive and dedicate time to different groups of people around yourself? Things I'm really starting to look into that I was totally against or neglecting. And I think it's also because you hear it from the wrong people, but things like meditation, mental health, and self-care, therapy. The last 2 years, I've been reading a lot and trying to take more time to look at these things. Once again, I think you just hear that from the wrong people. Just open Instagram or YouTube, you just look at this kind of content. From the outside perspective, you're going to be like, hey, this is for losers. Don't need to look into that. I don't have any problems with myself. I'm feeling great, quote. But if you actually take time to look into that deeper and do your own research about it, there's so much you can learn about yourself. I feel I've neglected that too much over the last years, and I'm feeling like now it's the, I don't know if it's an age thing or parenting or being my own boss, having a team around myself that I need to take care of now as well. I feel I've opened up that tunnel of vision, and I'm starting to spend more time on these sort of topics that I've never looked at before.
You have two children, both young. You're in the tropical years, as they call it.
How do you call it?
Tropical years.
Ah, yeah.
Because it's a lot of sweating.
Yeah.
And your partner also has a lot of ambition. And I just wondered how you communicate both your ambitions to each other.
Yeah, with Sabine, we're lucky. We've been together for over 10 years now. And I met Sabine, I was an intern, and Sabine was also like a typical starving designer. She was also like just out of school, just figuring out a few freelance jobs. No money, no studio, nothing. We were both broke and living anti-crack for the Dutch ones and Rotterdamers, they understand what it is. It's when you're living basically in a place to not be squatted is taken care of by a kind of organization. So you live in a place for very cheap, but it's run down, or you might be staying in a school or an office building and that's your house as a temporary stay. But the rent is very low. I was paying, I don't know, 280 euro per month for rent, charges included, which for the ones that know the prices of rents now in Rotterdam, it's insane.
Crazy.
We're talking time X5 and more now if you're looking for like a place. So together we've been growing up in parallel, and somehow this idea of like, I don't know, romantic idea of falling in love. I think it's a beautiful idea, but I think love is something you build over the years. And through my experience with Sabine, it's been really about that. Like, how do you build love together? And we've been doing that for 10 years, and now we have two kids. Sabine has been independent from day one, and she's been very successful in her own way. And I think it's like we keep challenging each other. And I think that's the great thing, is that we speak a similar language, but yet we work in two kind of different fields, her being a designer artist and me being an architect and doing a whole bunch of kind of things around architecture. We keep pushing each other every day. And we've never really worked actually together. Some people have asked us to collaborate and we've done small little things together, but we've never really fully sat down at a table working on something. We discuss strategy and ideas and collaboration, clients and artists and so on. It's just been a way of feeding each other like a ping pong. Throw the ball and it comes back to you and then you have to bounce back. It's been a cool ping pong for the last 10 plus years. And this idea of building love, I think that's my biggest learning, I think, through that experience of love is really something you build over the years. And again, don't give up. It would be easier to like change girlfriend every week or every month or every year. But try to build a relationship with someone for decades and stick to it and learn from it. You will make mistakes. You're not always right. And it's not always easy, but try to stick to it and then respect each other, learn from each other, try to inspire your better half. And yeah, I think that's just like one of the things I'm really proud of today when I look back at what we achieved together.
You talk a lot about inspiration and motivation. Do you see yourself as a personal brand?
I see myself as like a kid that has grew up in the middle of nowhere. And I had a dream one day to pursue like your own dream. And I just see myself in the middle of that. And no, I don't have PR, no agency, nothing. We're just like low-key trying to keep on going. And I just hope it will keep going. I always feel tomorrow could be over. Tomorrow, all of this we have around us could be gone. And how can you make sure that this is not the case? And how can you make sure that we will still be surrounded? My biggest fear, I think, is to end up alone and have no impact around myself, just doing my own thing by myself.
I think that's my... this?
I don't know. I just feel it's so exciting. Also, probably because I, growing up in the middle of nowhere without like huge role model or the things that were inspired me were like outside of my reach. I felt like this huge like youth frustration. Hey, fuck, I'm in this echo chamber. There's nothing around me. And how can you put yourself in a position where you can get closer to your inspiration and try to do something that will just make you every day happy to like do whatever you're doing. And so growing up in that idea, I still feel today like we're here in a studio, it's still anti-crack. I've been like trying to build this studio for the last 3 years and it's going really well on the paper, but in reality, it's a tough thing to run a studio, pay deals, clients having to call you back, keep your team, grow in your environment. It's a tough place. I have this feeling that anything could be gone tomorrow very easy. I just feel like we're just building something. And to be honest, I'm not sure where we're going, but I just feel that it's going somewhere.
What makes you so scared that all of a sudden everything is gone? Because I also read an interview before where you actually were asked, can you share a situation or a project where your emotions played the most significant role? And your answer was, start your own studio with no master plan in mind, quit your job actually, just because you have this feeling, this is the right thing to do. for me, it feels a little bit as the opposite of the answer that you gave before. That you're quite free in your mind that if you don't have anything, it's also fine.
Yeah, it took me 15 years to quit my job. If I think about my studies and the whole thing, I was like 30, 33 when I quit my job. It was like this growing thought about it, but it's not I just woke up one day and I was like, hey, cool, let's just quit my job. I had a kid already. It's not easy when you have a kid, mortgage, everything, and trying to survive. It's a tough decision, especially when you're in a comfortable position. You're working for like a leading architecture practice. Work is coming anyways. One day you work on a museum, next day you work on a tower, you work for an exhibition with the most exciting cultural institutions. Quitting that is tough. But at some point also you have to, what I'm trying to say is that you have to balance the sort of self-reward of happiness in doing something versus what's on paper. Understanding that comfort doesn't mean like happiness, or comfort doesn't mean like self-enrichment. Sometimes you have to take the risk, jump off the bridge, and be on a more unstable position. That feeling of being unbuckled is maybe actually the most exciting thing. That's what I'm trying to say, that even though now I still feel like we are starting, I'm really beginning to start something completely new here. It's 3 years, what is this on a career? Nothing, we're just starting. But that feeling overcomes the other feelings behind it of instability, risk of failure, all the things we've been talking about. I think this feeling of being part of something exciting is just drives all the rest. And the rest, like, you push that on the side and you keep going. And I think if you have that spirit or attitude, then I'm pretty sure that, that's, how did you name it? You said that feeling of self, of being a brand, personal brand. I don't see it like this, but it's true that now people start to call back. And I've been calling people or reaching out for over a decade and trying to connect with people. But it's true that this idea of creating a wave around yourself, it's true that at some point people start calling back and emailing you out of the blue because they've seen something, or because you published a book 2 years ago, or they saw an interview online and they actually read it, or they commented on an Instagram post and then they say, hey, I actually love what you're doing. I would love to work with you. And they send you a portfolio and you're like, wow, this is crazy. A kid in the UK or in Australia, like now I just received a portfolio in Japan from a student in architecture that says, hey, I've just been following your work. Would be great to collaborate together. When you get this kind of email, it's, wow, this is actually crazy. Because I would never consider myself as someone influential or have an impact or something. But somehow people follow. And then if you put things out in the world in different forms and it just lives its own life, somehow people start looking into it and then reaching out. I think that's one of the beautiful things of trying to create things for others. And I think that's also what is architecture really, if not just trying to bring to the world an idea and create something that doesn't need to be a building per se, doesn't need to have a roof or a facade, but creating space for others, whether it's on a real world or physical world or online. I think this is the power of architecture.
You started at Cloud. What is Cloud? What are you doing? Can you describe a little bit?
Cloud is a multidisciplinary studio based in Rotterdam where we create projects on architecture, research, and design. And that was my initial idea. I didn't have a master plan of how it should turn out or what phase it should be or what kind of scale or clients or project we would do. I just wanted to explore what we can actually do when you start a studio and how far you can go in exploring the future of architecture. And I think my feeling was after COVID 3 years ago when I started it, I really felt the world was changing very quickly. I felt the last 3 to 5 years have been like the acceleration of things has been, at least to my eyes, quite incredible. And you just open the news, things about politics and climate change. And then you look at the world today versus me when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, you feel like a responsibility as well towards the world. If I can leave a small positive impact behind me, I will somehow have done something to the world. When I'm gone and my kids are still here and they're proud of their dad, if one day I can have that possibility, that is pretty cool. And I feel as a creative, the world is your oyster. Look around yourself, the opportunities are all there and you can look through the window and be like, hey, the world is pretty grim outside. We're collapsing as a society. But you could also look outside and say, hey, actually the opportunities are around you. Look at how much things you could do to make this world a better place, whatever it is. And so cloud is for me like a sort of laboratory to develop ideas, to work with people, to connect, and to think of architecture in a broader kind of sense of how I was taught at school. Growing up in France, there was this huge heritage of the modern era and Le Corbusier and all the moderns in the post-war kind of thing. So there were very much this idea of architecture, it's something very serious. We have to build housing. It was very like this sort of social kind of engagement, but like really serious. And I feel as a young architect of coming from a different generation, it's sometimes hard to talk to people about architecture. What are we actually doing? Look outside, if you like it or don't like it, architecture in a kind of urban landscape, you could quite easily argue that it's pretty ugly if you look around yourself. But I think if you create a studio that is able to communicate to a different generation, my generation, our generation, a different message around architecture. And architecture is not only about building office buildings and skyscrapers and real estate development, but you can really create sense of community. You can connect with people. It's about creating space in all dimensions. It can be about like organizing a podcast. This is for me architecture, what we are currently doing, like just sitting together at a table in a small kitchen in an antique building in a city that has dedicated its history to architecture. This is for me like what architecture can create. So if you can create things that allow all these things to happen, and through this vision, you can create something positive that will engage people. And they might not understand it, or they might not even think this is architecture, but somehow you create those opportunities for people. Then I think this is just, yeah, I hope one day I can look back and feel, hey, that little piece of puzzle I've added actually somehow of a great impact on people around us. So yeah, if I can keep doing that, all in, and I'll keep doing it for a while.
How important is the word research to you?
Good question. I come from a traditional background, like studied architecture, never finished my studies, but still studied architecture. And academia, I feel, has overtaken that word. You imagine like a room full of books and you have to write papers and this has to be published and this sort of like whole academia machine. But I think research is more like thinking, how can you create something where you don't necessarily have a client behind that sort of support you? You dedicate time to create something new. How can you bring innovation? So I really believe in this idea that research can be applied. I love reading, I love hardcore research on an academic level. But I think what we're trying to do with Cloud here and my studio and all the other publications we're involved, being a deputy editor of Capsule is like another research project for me. I'm trying always to think, and that's what I tell to my team, how can you make research but turn that into a format that people will be able to digest? How can you turn research into a product? And it doesn't get stuck into this, oh, we've done research, but nothing came out of it.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, we're working on this book now. I had this obsession on the black color for a very long time, since I'm also like starting from my graffiti years, we were painting all things in black and stuff like that. And I've been loving trying to think, how can you think architecture through a color or material? Because I think one of the powers here of our generation of architects is to try to really rethink the impact of architects and architecture on our environments. And I think materials have a huge role in that. We've come from a generation where everything was built in concrete and steel, and we realize today, hey, this is maybe not the way to do it. So how can you rethink architecture through its materiality? But materiality for me, it's like you can think about, I don't know, buildings in timber or using new materials, you know, recycled material or anything. But it's also like the kind of the immaterial aspect of it as well, like the cultural value of architecture. I've been thinking, how can we think architecture through a single color? And I've been looking at the color black. So I've been like collecting references and books of people that have been writing and working around that single color. So you could think about people like Pierre Soulages in art, or Rothko, or people like Damien Hirst even, that have been exploring the idea of blackness. You can think about fashion like Balenciaga or Yves Saint Laurent that were exclusively working around the color black. But that kind of gets you the layer of the color, and then you think about more materials and textures and so on. And you also can think of architects that have also been exploring that as like a theme, like Mies van der Rohe. Or long story short, we're building this research where we collected 100 samples of black materials that are either coming from natural sources, bio-based. So you think about coal, you think about some marble that are incredible, without completely polished, that look like a screen of an iPhone without any veins or anything. you think about synthetic sources like recycled plastics and bio leathers and other things. And so we're building this book now, which will be a sort of database with 100 black materials. We're going to put it online on our website and you can download it for free. There's no financial idea behind it, but I just want to put it out there as research. You turn that into a book, put it online. People are available on every single material. There's a QR code. So you can directly like download the contact sheets of the company so you can access the material directly yourself. And that is, for me, one way to look at architecture, like a different way to look at architecture, maybe more through like design or materials. So yeah, that's one example I can give you of obsession. You turn that into research, have a studio around you so your team can help you build this together. We create a crazy database of materials, put that into a book, website, download for free information. It's for you to grab. Just have it. That's what, like, for me, like applied research example, I think. It's quite like a nice way to dedicate your time and energy into creating something positive around you that will be used by many.
What kind of effect do you think you have on your team members? What kind of...
Also from the corporate environment, or having retired from corporate architecture, let's put it like this. I didn't want anymore to run a huge team and become a kind of a manager. I had lost track with my strengths being a creative person. So we have a small team. Well, between 3, 4, 5, 6 people. Each of them has a different nationality. It's not really a thing I was looking for, but I think that's the chance of Rotterdam being such a multicultural place. You have this incredible chance of people coming from Croatia, Slovakia, Japan, Ireland, Scotland. My team is super mixed and we're all bringing our own stories to the table. Some people have studied in the Netherlands, in Delft, others came here for work. And I love that, being part of this melting pot. It's not boring at all to have that. So yeah, I'm trying to build a team where we share values. I think that's super key besides skills or being talented at software or whatever. I'm looking for people with a story and values. And that's why also I didn't want to call the office Paul Cournet. That's why I wanted to give it a name. Cloud is more concept. Thinking like clouds, we are cloud. And I think us together also sitting at a table, it's a form of cloud, talking, exchanging. And I think the power of architecture, thinking of it again, not as a building with a roof and a facade and an entrance door, but think of architecture or building as a cloud, whatever that means, you know? And as being together like 6 to 8 hours every day, sitting together, working on projects, architecture is so much about it, the process. If you get to build something in your life as an architect, you're pretty lucky. It might take years before you build something, and hopefully you're still proud of the project after all the compromises and all the external forces that come together to put this project together. So I really believe in the process. And I think my team working together, we're just trying to create this infrastructure around us, this cloud of ideas and projects. For me, being an architect, it's more about having a vision than having a style. And that vision, you can apply it at different scales, different mediums. Either it ends up turning into a building, a book, a chair, an installation, an interior. If you have a vision and you can apply that through all these skills, then start creating a practice that is super multidisciplinary and culturally relevant, hopefully.
What kind of a different values are you looking for?
Since I started Cloud, I've been like rewriting a manifesto. And I wrote it on a paper really when I quit my job and I started it. I was like, okay, what do I want or not want? And now I reached to these 10 points where it's not final, but I think like 80, 90% of it is pretty good. I think what I learned from working in the corporate environment is that there's many things that are untold and becomes rules in that world that actually don't really need to be like that at all. And for instance, there's so many aspects of it that I didn't feel belonging anymore to those values, that I think the project of building my own company or by building my own like studio was also a reaction and a way of setting my own rules. And I think that's when you're lucky enough to be able to do that, to set your own rules or rules for you and the people around you, it's like a great feeling. Big companies, big architecture firms do a lot of competitions because it's kind of a machine that has been established that's, oh, there's a client that wants a new project. They're going to invite 5, 6 architecture offices to make a proposal. Most of the cases, either you're not going to be paid or so badly paid that you can't cover your expenses. So you're essentially losing money or you're working for free. But to do that, because you're working for a developer or client that needs to do that, then what are you going to do to cut your costs? That when you're going to get free interns or unpaid labor to be able to balance the free work you've accepted to do for a client. And so you create this whole energy where you hire or you get people that are really poorly paid or unpaid. You ask them to work overtime without any compensation. People are exhausted, try to do that for 10 years. And I can tell you like the kind of like impact it has on like health and other things. And then out of these numerous competitions you're doing, because you're competing with like equivalent practices around, you might actually get to continue with those clients very little times. So you end up working on like 20 competitions, the same way, same logic to maybe get one if you're lucky. And all of the sort of industry is based around that. And I think this is so wrong in the way we accept as architects to work under those conditions, so wrong in the way we treat the people we get in our teams. For instance, I don't have interns here. It would be easy for me to get some free labor here and get someone, but I'm not interested to do that. I think this is just really wrong also for the new generation to tell them, hey, this is how we want to treat you. So I said, no more competitions. We don't do competitions. And I think if us architects collectively or creative, we were able to change that wave and then say, we don't work for free, that should be illegal. And that, I think, would put a message to the client that asked us to do that, and that's the whole corporate environment, so developers and others. I think then you can, yeah, you just have to think about it differently. Talk to a lawyer or any other profession, try to explain the madness of architecture studios trying to stay afloat, and people will look at you with eyes saying, you're crazy, you will never survive. And this is also the reason why a lot of architecture studio bankrupt over the years and bankrupt over bankrupt because they can't pay bills. You just create, I think, a very unhealthy and unsustainable environment. So I think that's one of the lessons that I really learned. You don't need like hundreds of people. Just take five, be highly involved, value your team, be involved in every single project. Make sure that you're involved in projects that you can sustain the studio. And if you start to have this attitude as well, I think it just creates a much more healthy work environment. And I think as a new generation, I feel this responsibility of changing things in that structural way as well.
Hypothetically, I will be an architect and I start tomorrow and I need an assignment. You say don't do competitions. How do I do it?
Yeah, that's the thing. And I get this question a lot. Kids coming out of school or still studying or looking for work, they're like, but how do you do it, Paul? You seem so busy and you have so many clients. I think you just have to look outside, look through the window, and you can't believe how many opportunities are around you. And I can't explain that better than just look outside. And you're surrounded by people that need you. But there's so many architects around you that you have to find your niche. What are you really good at and what are your values and what are you trying to do here? An architecture is a bit like a GP, like a general practitioner. Everybody needs one. Someone needs to like the house. Someone needs to build an office building. You're the useful guys that are just going to put the plans together, building permits, they're going to build it, whatever. It's not very exciting. You're more like treated like an engineer. You wish you were an artist, but people treat you a bit like an engineer. But you're an architect at the end of the day. And so I think you have to find this balance of bringing your vision to the world and at the same time being pragmatic enough that you are here to bring solutions as well. And so as a young student or someone trying to be independent or just simply work, at some point you just want to be doing something. I think you just have to look outside and look at the world and tell yourself, hey, who do I want to connect? How can I surround myself with people that will value my work, that I will contribute? And then together, I can build something that will keep going over the years. And yes, if you don't do competitions, there's so many other ways to work. Find your niche. So who do you want to work with? Do you want to work with developers? Find a developer that will understand your vision and together go to them and be like, hey, I would love to help you. Developers have budgets. So this idea that they cannot pay, it's not true. They don't want to pay. But find a way to enter the door with a proposal, with an idea that they will support you and pay you to do it. Do you love creating space for people to live? Do you want to work on housing? Do you want to do renovation? Find friends. Everybody has a friend that needs a renovation or something. Find ways to work with your friend and use that one single project as your portfolio project that will just create your visibility so people will start coming back to you because they want your vision, your style, your aesthetic, your selection, your design taste. My personal feeling was that I wanted, when I started Cloud, I wanted to connect with people that I feel belong to a similar community because we listen to the same music, because we read the same books, because we like the same movies. I felt, for instance, the idea of magazines and books could be like a great vehicle for me to connect with people I liked. And that's it. I just want to spend time with people I like. Either it's my team, my clients, potential collaborators. To do that, you have to put yourself out there. You have to do something. Nobody's going to call you if you're sitting in your room and just complaining that no one wants you or you're not going to find any work. Go to every single opening. Are you more into art? Go to every art opening. You will meet all the artists that might become your clients. If you want into music, go clubbing and go to music events, and this is your community. Are you into sports? Then hang out with people that are into sports, and eventually this is your community, and then you will end up having people calling you back. I'm oftenly sitting in a room where I'm the only architect, but I'm always surrounded by people that are creatives, that are doing other things, and somehow being the only architect in the room. When you're in the room with 100 people, if the only architect and looking for work, don't worry, someone is an architect in that room. So put yourself in this position of what I would recommend is that you go to every single event, go out, go in the world, go to dinners, go to parties, go to things where you will find your community. If they embrace you, they will support you, and eventually you will get work out of it.
How important is it for you and maybe for others to ask the right questions? And how do you develop this skill?
Asking the right question in sense of
just asking questions to yourself.
Yeah. I think the key, is to be humble and to really, that's why I was telling you, I still feel like these little kids that grew up in France that had no kind of big opportunities and just have, I still have this kind of dream of like, just keep on working on things I love, whatever it is. And if you're humble to be open-minded and leave room for others to criticize what you're doing, if you stay open-minded in a way that you will happily receive criticism and comments from others, I think that helps to grow yourself and then become like just a better version of yourself. Then I think that's a good way to start and to understand that you're just one of millions, and then there's millions out there, and then there's room for everybody. And that's the other thing. I feel you could look at the world and say, hey, there's room for nobody, but actually there's also room for anybody. If you want to pursue a career in any kind of niche, the most niche industry, if you stick to it, people will also at some point recognize you and want to spend time with you, essentially. So I think just find your niche and see how useful you can be in that little bubble that you create around yourself.
Did you ever have a mentor, or are you a mentor to others?
No, never. And that's the thing. When I studied, I hated my studies in architecture. I really hated it. When I grew up in France, I felt it was the wrong place. In a way, OMA for me was the best school. It was tough and intense, but it was an amazing experience because it was putting everybody on the edge and everybody on such a high level of demand that it was like a very great thing. But that's the thing. Or maybe every day I have a new mentor, or I never had a mentor. I'm not really sure about it. But I feel like I've just tried to surround myself by things that inspire me and take me to the next level. I had the chance also to teach for a few years in Delft. And that was also a great experience of how can you be in the room surrounded by a group of students, and how can you inspire every single student to be better? And I think trying to be in this position really makes you understand that it's not about you anymore. Nobody cares about you, who you are, where you're coming from, what you're doing. But people will care about you if you can help them in their own journey. If you can be in the context of a school and with a group of students and you can help them to develop their own project, I think it's a very interesting position to be in. That really is looking at a mirror, but the mirror is also transparent. And you're like, how can I spend my time to make sure that you will become a great architect, whatever that means. So that's something I would also recommend to anyone. Teach, put yourself in a position where you're not talking about yourself, or open a podcast, open a YouTube channel, open an Instagram account where you will talk about others that are inspiring you. And I think this idea of giving platform to others, launch a magazine, organize parties where you invite DJs, I think this is like such an amazing way to make yourself valuable, but also understand, yeah, that you're just there to give platform to others.
In your role as a teacher, or in having your own team, you seem to know quite well where to go, or have the feeling on intuition where to go. do you also get the feedback from students and from your team, Paul, this is exactly what we needed, or that you don't get it, and then there's...
Yeah, that's a good question. I try to be very open with my team, so we just discuss things.
Do you ever ask them what they need?
Yeah, we discuss it all the time. That's why I think the success of a small studio is that you can do that. You can be very personal in a good sense. You can really customize or adjust things for each individual. Some people are very organized and they want to be organized. Some people are very chaotic, so you have to help them to be more organized, but they need more freedom. So I try to give space to people so they can grow individually. For instance, my team now, someone wants to get the accreditation to be an architect. I'm going to support that. Go do it. It's in Slovakia. We're not doing any project in Slovakia. We don't need that as a studio, but that will reinforce you as a person, as an architect. You need to take days. I'll support it and go do that. I'm trying to give space to people so they can grow. I am developing this thing of people doing workshops. So my team, for instance, they want to do workshops or online courses. I'm also supporting all of that. I'm trying to create this environment where we work together, but then through work, also each individual in their journey, they can have the feeling of self-development. And I think that's key if you want to keep people around you, that they feel that we work together, but also personally, the time and support that is made for them to grow.
We both know a lot of companies that don't treat the teams and their cultures like you describe it. Yeah. I can imagine if people hear what you describe, everyone is, wow, I would love to work here because he's treating everyone quite well. Do you ever get frustrated about the companies that you know where it is quite the opposite, although they say what you say? And how do you monitor constantly that it is exactly how you say it in your own team?
Yeah, look, I really feel if you want to create a positive wave, you have to put everything in position. You can't miss a shot in a way. So you have to make everything possible around yourself that it will create that. And it might be very long term and might have no impact at all what you're trying to do. And it's very hard to measure it. Ian, as like a boss, you're paying for all the bills and then you're like, oh, there's nothing left here and I still have to pay taxes. How do you do that? And then this person is asking you to have days off and then to do like a workshop here, but I don't need that. But somehow you have to support it. What you have to do is that if you want to create that infrastructure that will have these positive ripples around you, you just eventually have to ask more budget to the client. Or when a client is coming to you, you have to explain that, or they have to understand that logic around you. So they would hire you instead of a big corporation. For instance, you pick a big name, they are very expensive because they cost a lot of money. They have a lot of costs. They have huge teams. They have HR, BD, PR to pay. The offices, it's very expensive. But you as a small studio, you might be more flexible. You will have more time and you will essentially be less expensive. But sometimes still people come to me and say, how come this is so expensive? We have to do this project and I can't pay you for this amount. If you start explaining to your client, it's not just me that you're paying here. It's my team. I try to keep the expenses low, but at the same time, I can't lose money here because the money is 100% reinvested in creating energy around us. And I think if people and clients start to understand that, then they will support you. And then you will have enough budgets to give time and space for your team to do extra activities that are not directly connected to the job we have to deliver for a client, but it's self-improvement. And it's a tough one. How do you explain that to a client? I don't know, actually. If you manage to work with people that have time to discuss with you and understand how you're working, and maybe this is the mistake I'm having of not having any PR or communication around us because we don't really have a website, don't really have an Instagram. You can't find anything about cloud online. But I also like that being under the radar because if you want to work with us, you have to connect to us. You have to come to Rotterdam, sit in our little shared office or little shared kitchen, and then we start talking and we understand how we can work together. I think you shouldn't be too greedy of trying to have, hey, I know people that started their own studio. They have 20 people all of a sudden. They're like, oh, we are super busy. We have so many clients. Great. Is it actually quality work that you guys are doing, or this is just quantity? Because I feel this is just quantity over there. So I've been trying to create this thing of, hey, we do small amount of projects, small team. We are really involved. And every client, they have to understand how we work. So yeah, we might be a little bit more expensive or than what they imagine, but that's the reality, dude. It's things cost. And then, yeah, you'd have to be lucky enough to have those clients calling you back. But if you delivered like a high quality product that, for instance, I'm convinced, and I'm not like trying to sell you something here, but I'm convinced we can deliver a better project than a big corporate office for any single project, because we just have more time and we will be more involved and we won't go after you at the end of 4 weeks when the assignment is done and telling, yeah, sorry, we're off the hook now. This is in your hands. We will still be involved. So I really believe like now the world doesn't need big corporate machines. We need like small, more boutique scale studios that are really focusing on quality. Because when you look around yourself, yes, maybe we still need to build like skyscrapers and large developments, but is this really what's going to last and what's going to create like meaning for like us? I think we just need to completely rethink our relationship with like space and architecture and commissions. I mean, we have to really be that new generation that set this stone step. And I'm sure there's many other studios that do the same thing, but I think if we can be one of them to create that new wave of ways of approaching architecture, from the way we build to the way we treat our employees, to the way we run a studio, to the way we collaborate with our clients, then I'm pretty sure it might take 10, 20 years, but it will work.
Patience.
Exactly.
Before we go to the do or die questions, how was the project for you with Stedelijk Museum? The answer that you just gave, is this also something that you communicated to the Stedelijk Museum director? This is how we approach it. Trust us, because it's quite a big project, a museum in Holland.
So that's a very interesting case. We've just opened the renovation of the sculpture hall of Stedelijk in Amsterdam. What I was trying to frame earlier, I went to dinner, I met a person that was involved in the project. I didn't know the person, I had no idea Stedelijk was doing that. And the person told me they're actually doing a competition, but there were three teams involved. And the three teams were office from the UK, office from Paris, and eventually us. So we had a very small budget to do that pitch, very fast, quick idea. But I said, yes, we're going to do it, because I knew if there is three teams and we are the only local team, we have a huge chance to get this project, because Stedelijk is a museum, it's a huge machine. They need people that are available, that can be on site. They send you a call. You need to be at Stedelijk at 10. You go there. So I knew that if we were delivering good proposal and show them how we work, so making a presentation, going there, showing we are a small studio, where I'm coming from, the approach we're trying to have to architecture. We came to the first meeting. I had taken two boxes of samples of materials and I put that all on the table. Was full of samples to be like, hey, this is the conversation we want to create with you. We can pick materials. I know all the producers of these custom materials, from bioresin to recycled plastics, veneers. There was just like a room full of these samples. And they loved it. And somehow we developed the project, we presented the project. But I felt that the way I tried to explain them is that it has to be a collaborative process. I'm not coming here to give you a design, to sell it to you, and then you embrace it. We have to work this thing together. And I think that's often the thing of a pitch or presentation of an idea to clients. Yes, there is a design, they will like it or not, but they have to feel that we are starting a journey together between the museum and the architecture studio. So I don't have all the answers. We just went here for a few weeks back to the studio to make a proposal. They like the proposal, they like the design. The idea was to work with simplicity. We've been constantly trying to create this sort of idea of timeless. How do you create something timeless? The museum is a long history of change of directors. It's a chaotic history. This is a lot of pressure to survive as a cultural institution. So you can't be too loud either. So you have to translate all of these requests into a design, essentially. And on one hand, there was this idea of materials. How can we bring also innovation to the museum? We use these recycled plastics that are made of recycled e-waste, all the black things from keyboards and phones and mouses. This is companies that recycle that into black sheets. So we use that. That was something they loved. It's a great product. We used a lot of other recycled plastic. We use linoleum, which is a fantastic Dutch product we've all seen in schools and gymnasiums. It has always been sustainable. And that's like the big thing today of being sustainable. Everybody tries to be sustainable, but actually you have products that have existed here for decades and 100 years that have always been sustainable. So we try to bring that and create a stage for the art. I think at the end also, as an architect, we try to exist. And when you work on a space like the Stedelijk Museum, you have this incredible building from the 19th century, beautiful brick building. You have the addition of Bentham & Cowell, which is very loud, very Dutch architect, early 2000 design. And you have the collection of the museum. What do you really add here? We wanted to create something that was timeless. For that, we worked with this brushed stainless steel. Everything is built in wood with this thin layer of stainless steel on top of it. And the museum needs flexibility also. One day they organize a performance. Next week they have a show, then Marina Abramović coming. They need to be able to organize dinners and so on, things like that in the space. So we just created a kind of like backdrop for the collection and the life of the museum. Then, yeah, we worked on it for 2 years. So that's the thing, you come up with an idea. But after that, you have to understand we're going to work together 2 years every single week to end up to projects. Hopefully, will be appreciated by Amsterdamers and visitors after that. So they wanted, for instance, to have a chair. And then we told them, hey, as a museum, or you work with existing designs from designers that have been there for a long time, or we actually create something new. You are such an incredible generation of designers in the Netherlands. You have to lead the way. We ended up working with Sabine on the Stedelijk chair, and she brought in BD Barcelona, who produced it, a chair fully in aluminum, fully recyclable, very solid, stackable. So these are things in the process that we proposed to them. So we explained to them, you have to be a kind of teacher, right? You have to explain a lot of things to clients. It's a conversation. And you have to understand how a museum works. So they will always tell you they don't have the money. So we need to find the budgets for supporting anything. But as soon as we propose an idea and our ways of supporting it, then it was honestly incredible. Again, me being not even Dutch and being commissioned by the most important museum in the Netherlands to help them on the renovation of their most important space. It's like the face of the museum. It was incredible. And also seeing that they were extremely humble and open-minded. So when you manage to create that sort of conversation, a museum like that, it leads to great things. So yeah, it was for me the kind of project and the kind of attitude I hope to develop in the future as well.
Such an institute, highly regarded, gave you a chance upcoming. Have you ever thought about passing the torch to someone who is in your slipstream or someone who doesn't have the image of Sabine, for instance?
For designing a chair?
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. We discussed many ideas actually before landing on Sabine. But yeah, with Sabine, it was easy because we can discuss it and I can also convince her to be involved.
Yeah.
So we found a formula for it. But we just looked at many options. And at the end, for instance, what was exciting to work with Sabine on that project is that she had never designed a chair. So that was the first chair. It was also an interesting challenge for her. And still, maybe in our little circle, it's someone that has now a certain recognition. But for most of the public, it's who are we? We're like nobodies. Being under 40 and being able to design a chair for a museum, it's pretty iconic, you know? So I think, and having a female designer that studied in Eindhoven, and that's like also like a long history of working in the Netherlands. It made a lot of sense. But we're having so many now new conversations with the museums and others where I love to create these situations. Here we did this chair with Sabine, but next time we will definitely work with other people. And we tried to design a chair as architects, but we failed. So we figured maybe better to ask like a proper product design studio to do it. So that's how it came about.
You thought it through very thoroughly, probably, because you also can imagine what it can do to the public opinion that you say, oh, they're a couple, so they give each other assignments. So there's also a lot of...
In that sense. Yeah, that's the thing of working or living with another creative in the house. We never really worked on full projects together, but it's easier to explain to each other why one can benefit from joining a project. We can dive into the story of the chair, but we've approached other companies before, ended up working with BD Balstona and Sabine, and they all rejected the offer.
Oh, really?
And it doesn't really matter the names and who they are and so on. But it's very challenging to support the production of a design of a new chair by someone that is not like a chair designer. There's many brands that say no before.
And why is this?
Because it's very expensive. And now the market, it's a very tough market. So there's many chairs, right? So why would you design a new chair? Before landing on that, we received a few no's. So what people say, it's the chair by Sabine that I could convince pretty much to do for free because it was a great opportunity. But we discussed before with other brands, and you need a partner to do that. So through Sabine's work, she had a very good relationship with BD Barcelona to do it. And BD being a brand that has been relaunched now, based in Barcelona in Spain, but very eager to develop a new product, a bit experimental in a way, because it's a fully aluminium with Sabine, not the most like simple kind of connection. As they invested into prototyping and developing and making it happen and providing a lot of chairs, like 120 chairs and 60 tables, I think it's in a 6 months period. Most of the brands will tell you, we need a minimum 2 years. And who's going to pay for that? So while you're like, we thought you would pay for it and we only have 6 months. A lot of people say no to that. Either they are big brands or smaller ones. We are very lucky, actually, to be honest. For a long time, we felt there would be no chair and we would just reuse existing old chairs from the museum.
Did they ever give you sleepless night? Are you a good sleeper?
kids give me sleepless nights. Yeah, that's a fact. Work less now. I really try to limit the amount of hours I'm doing at work and be more like involved on the strategic side and being surrounded by a great team that can carry design tasks and presentations and things. In the last 3 years, maybe, I don't know, I can count them on one hand how many extra days we've done outside of the regular office hours. We start at 9, we finish at 5 or 6. Because I really believe there's enough time to do great things in that time. And if we don't have time today, we will do them tomorrow. And we'll just have to explain to the client that we'll do it tomorrow. So I think it's really possible.
Some do or die questions. Are you more rational or emotional?
As an architect, you're like nor an artist nor an engineer. So you're bits in between. And so on a lot of these questions, you have to be able to juggle these two forces. If you're too rational, you will fail. If you're too emotional, you will fail as well. Yeah, it's like pepper and salt. You just have to sprinkle a little bit of both together to, I think, to get somewhere.
Question, were you more rational before or more emotional? Or were you always more balanced?
I think through my life, I've been much more, I think deeply inside, I'm like a creative person and I've learned to be more organized. So I would say I'm more like than originally emotional character. And I've learned to be more rational over the years because I think structure just actually boosts your creativity. You need to work for years to understand that. I was a mess, a kid, and I was such a mess. But then you need years of work to understand that. Can be creative, but if you have structure in your work and if you're able to structure other people's work, the outcome will be so much better.
What is being a mess as a child?
No, just like being a creative, doing graffiti and skateboard. And I had coming from like a simple background and I didn't have particularly ambition for a career. I never thought I would basically run an architectural studio as a kid, or even if you asked me 10 years ago as a student, I never really thought about it like this. I feel some people, they're like, hey, I'm going to be my own brand, or the studio is going to have my name. I'm building my own brand. I never really had that feeling. I just felt I just wanted to be, and that's the feeling I still have. I just want to be free and work with people that are exciting. And to do that, the best way to do it, I learned over the years, is actually not necessarily work for a big corporation, but it's just to create your own structure around yourself, because people will stay and they will like you, what you do, and client will call you back and it's going to be great fun. So I think just over the years, I ended up building my studio. But yeah, the core of what I want to do, I just want to be creative and work on fun projects and create conversations with people I relate. That's it.
Next question. Are you more strategy or intuition?
I think right now I'm more strategy. Strategy is key for me.
More talker or listener?
Also both. I think you have to listen to be able to talk.
Team sports or individual sports?
Team sports.
Do you do sports?
I used to, but do you count like putting babies to sleep as a sport? You know, that's...
Now I do.
Yeah, exactly. I used to, but yeah, team sports.
What kind of sports did you do?
I've done all kinds of things. I've done basketball, football. I even played rugby for 3 months, broke my arm. I did tennis. I hated it. I've done judo. I've done wrestling, skateboard, BMX, all of it.
Trust your gut instinct or follow the advice of a trusted mentor?
I would go for trust your feeling. Be critical and listen to your mentors. But at the end of the day, what matters is what you think. So just go for it.
Work with highly talented but unpredictable team members or less skilled but reliable ones?
Maybe less skilled and more talented ones, because you can shape anyone. You can train anyone. I really believe that, also coming from my own experience. You can really become someone you've never imagined if you're in the right context, in the right position. So I'd rather have someone that maybe today is not, or you could be considered not talented, but is a good listener, or will be a sponge and absorb. And it might take a while, but you can really surpass anything you've imagined for yourself and people around you. So yeah, for sure.
Accept help when struggling or handle challenges on your own to prove your resilience.
Accept help for sure. Alone, you're nobody. If you understand that others can help you to be better and help each other, I think that's how you can grow eventually yourself as well.
Push for radical innovation in every project, risking client relationships, or adapt a more client-friendly approach that might stifle the innovation.
Stay radical.
Pioneer an untested innovative architectural method that could redefine the industry, or perfect existing techniques with guaranteed results.
Innovation.
undergo significant personal sacrifice to achieve a breakthrough in your career, or prioritize personal happiness over career advancement?
Oh my God, this is a tough one. Don't listen to my advisors, so I'll skip that one.
Involve your children in understanding and experiencing your professional world to blend family and career life, or keep professional life distinct to give your children a more traditional home environment?
Yeah, your kids are the future, man. Everything we do from the moment you have kids, it's all about your children. So anything I can do to help them have a better future and grow up in an environment that will be happy and successful in whatever path they choose, anything I do now is for my kids. We try to expose them to as much things as possible and create this sort of environment for them to grow.
That was the do or die. You're saved.
Oof.
What are your dreams?
So as an architect or as a creative person, I've always dreamt to feel free in the work I do or get some kind of freedom in the work I do. And I hope that if I can keep doing what I've been doing for the next, I don't know, 50 years or so, that would be a really exciting journey. So I really hope that I can keep going and waking up every day and keep doing what I'm doing. And that kind of feeling of freedom, it's a pretty exciting thing to look forward to. Every time I create something, every time I'm working on something, I'm always thinking about the sort of younger version of myself. 20 years ago, when I was a student, I looked up to so many people. And if in a way I can inspire that sort of kid I was when I was just doing graffiti and skateboard and create something positive that will inspire some kids and leave behind me even just a little positive thing in this world, I hope I have the chance to inspire this kid out there. Over the last 3 years, I've been writing this Cloud Manifesto as a way for me to try to, I don't know, put tracks on what I was trying to create with Cloud and create a vision for me and for the people joining the project. I wrote 10 points which help me every day, and I hope help people understand what we are trying to achieve. So 10 points. 1, think like clouds. It's about being part of something bigger. Think like clouds. 2, no more competitions. Don't work for free. Instead, spend time on your own agenda and your own projects, and you don't have time to work for free for other people. So work for yourself. 3, architecture is a process. Architecture takes so long to build. It takes a lifetime to build a single building. So yeah, just enjoy the process, celebrate it. It's all about that. 4, building community, not buildings. Find your niche, find your community, find your people. This is all about you creating space for others. So focus on building this beautiful community around you and the rest will follow. 5, systems. As an architect, I really believe you're not an artist, you're not an engineer, you're an architect. So try to create something that is replicable, scalable, almost like a product, something that you can think and repeat and that'll save you a lot of trouble. So architecture is a system. 6, material matters. This is, for me, the central question of our times, and how can you rethink architecture through its materiality? It's all about rethinking or bringing innovation in your project through new materials, more sustainable materials, more innovative materials, either bio-based or synthetic. But can we rethink architecture through the lens of its own physicality? 7, planet over profits. I think we've just spent the last century building a world at the expenses of our planet. So I think we really need to make a shift. And how can you make sure that in any single project you create, you benefit our environment, our planet? 8, just keep it simple. Architecture is so complex that you just have to keep it simple. And yeah, you can have big ideas, big ambitious ideas, but it's all about trying to create a message that is extremely simple and clear that you can make a point through that. 9, stay radical. Just be yourself. Create something that is your own vibe and doesn't need to follow any trends, anything you see out there online or whatever. Just stay true to yourself and stay radical. And last point, 10, donate 1%. So that's the idea. You work so hard the whole year, you can at least dedicate 1% of your profits to a good cause, a charity, something that you care and you feel like will have positive impact around. So yeah, just do that effort and give something to others. I think that's the minimum anyone should do, anyone could do. That's it, 10 points. Thank you so much, Bastian, for your time and for the opportunity. I'm super grateful for it. And yeah, I'm looking forward to more of this together. Thank you so much.
That was my conversation with Paul Cornet. A clear-eyed reflection on what happens when you leave a powerful legacy behind and choose to build on your own terms. What stood out most was Paul's ability to articulate structure without compromise, whether in how he runs a studio, shapes a research agenda, or balances being a parent and a practitioner. His manifesto isn't abstract, it's lived, from setting hard boundaries around time and fairness to keeping architecture open to conversation. His story shows how practice can be seen different, not just as production, but as a long-term act of care.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button, rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter and spread the word, so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles, and that's okay. But standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward, because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.